Hi, you're listening to the International Risk Podcast. We hear from the traditional to the wacky. Your host, Dominic Bowen, will ask the questions that you all want the answers to. If you know Dominic, then you know that he is well acquainted with risk. Joined by our excellent guests, he'll reveal innovative ideas on how you can ensure your organisation thrives in areas with high risk.
Hi, I'm Dominic, host of the International Risk Podcast. Today on the podcast, we're peeling back the curtain on Latin America's infamous reputation for organised crime. Beyond the dramatic portrayals of mafia entities lies a much more complex and disturbing reality. With insights from the UN Convention Against Organized Crime Coalition, we understand Latin America to be one of the most volatile, with organized crime claiming 30% of homicides in the region. The economic burden is staggering, and it tops more than $236 billion every year. And these figures underscore the significance of our dialogue today and the global implications of these criminal networks and the risks to people and to businesses in Latin America, but also around the world. We're honored to have Damian Gariglio, a keen observer and analyst of Latin American geopolitics, join us today on the International Risk Podcast. He's a political scientist and currently working as a researcher at the University of Buenos Aires, where he focuses on criminal structures in Latin America. Welcome to the International Risk Podcast, Damian.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Damian. Now, Latin America often conjures up images of organized crime. How accurate is this image that people who haven't had the blessing to be able to visit Buenos Aires, and what are the nuances that are missing in the global public's perception of Latin America?
Well, Latin America, of course, is a region with the highest homicide rates caused by organized crime. That is a fact. 8 of the 10 countries with the highest murder rates are in Latin America. In addition, we take into consideration that South America is located in a key geopolitical position with the only 3 world producers of cocaine. So trafficking is the main source of income. Consequently, drug traffickers are responsible for much of Latin American violence. I would agree that it's a hotspot for organized crime and mafia organizations, but at the same time, it's not the only hotspot. We are talking about the worldwide phenomenon.
That's fantastic. I appreciate you explaining that, Damian. When we talk about 8 of the 10 highest homicide rates around the world, what does that mean for people living in Latin America?
Well, it means being surrounded by different kinds of problems. It's not only about organized crime, but also about uncertainties involving the economy, also high rates of unemployment, which is a principal cause of why organized crime is so popular in these countries. We cannot forget that it's a socioeconomic problem. So if you tackle all these problems in the sense that most people really lack other possibilities just to enter into the crime, I don't think it's really fair to say that Latin America is all about organized crime. Organized crime is there because there is also people demanding these services like drug consumption and all that as a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, there's been a lot of fantastic reporting in the media. I know The Guardian in the UK, along with other reputable media, have been doing some stories on the increase in organized crime in Latin America. And I think one of the underlying messages that's really resonated with me has been that this is a problem that originates in Europe. This is people who are buying drugs, buying cocaine, buying other drugs in Europe, and it's fueling the demands that's causing the violence in Latin America. And I'm really keen to hear your opinion on that.
Exactly. If you take into consideration also the fact that America has always exported a standard security model based on the use of military assets in counter-narcotic policies in Latin America, I would say that most of the violence that takes place these days in Latin America is due to the involvement of the military assets. So I think in a way it's not fair to say that it's all about saying that Latin America is a violent continent. No, I'm talking about the way the global north is solving the problem of drug trafficking in the world, like places in South America.
Yeah, I'd love to explore that with you in a little bit. I understand that organized crime has changed significantly in Latin America over the last 10 years. Can you outline what this transformation is and what's caused this transformation in organized crime?
Talking about criminal structures, the current trend in organized crime is there is a fragmentation process of the criminal organization. That means that the logic of the big drug cartels no longer apply here. So the disappearance of the big drug cartels has led to the creation of smaller gangs looking to enter into the cocaine trade, to the so-called baby cartels. In the last decade, I think places like Brazil has seen the opposite process, going from fragmentation to concentration. This is the case of organizations like the Primer Comando Capital, which are really taking over neighboring countries like Paraguay, Bolivia, and also it's a huge threat in places like Argentina right now. So the continuous change of criminal organizations is about adaptation capabilities as a survival strategy. As a consequence, criminal structures have changed in the last years, allowing the cooperation among different organizations for the purpose of maximizing their profits.
That makes a lot of sense. And can you explore and unpack for us today, what are the main criminal enterprises that are driving these criminal syndicates, whether they're more fragmented or whether it's a more consolidated model that you outlined in Brazil? How are these different enterprises and what are they and how are they rippling through Latin America's economy and society?
Yeah, if we take a look at the latest organized crime index of 2023, the cocaine market is most relevant in South America, as explained before. Another thing to take into account is that there is also significant growth in the synthetic drug trade in countries like Mexico. Fentanyl is smuggled across the U.S.-Mexico border, giving rise to the so-called fentanyl crisis. Also, we have to take into account other crimes like environmental crimes, which are huge in places like Brazil. Central America also ranked third in the world for arms trafficking. Most of these guns are supplied by the illegal market in the United States. And finally, we also have to take into consideration financial crimes, which are most usual in countries like Mexico and Guyana. This probably involves private sector entities and misappropriation of public funds, tax evasions, and of course, money laundering as a major concern.
So that's really quite significant. Not surprisingly, you spoke about the fentanyl crisis in the US, but also you're touching on the environmental crimes and then, of course, financial crimes. These are not small-scale operations. So I wonder, and I'd be keen to hear from you about the coexistence, maybe the cooperation or collaboration between criminal factors and government entities in the region. How effective has government efforts been in increasing public safety?
As mentioned before, organized crime takes advantage of political instability for illicit businesses' purposes, through corruption or violence. On the other hand, I think the impact on security policies is focused on framing the drug problem, as I said before, as a national security threat. This is a kind of model that has been exported by the United States, involving the training of armed and civilian police in military operations. This policy had really negative impacts on democracy, human rights, and civil-military relations, causing political instability in the Americas. It really contributed to the globalization of drug consumption, the proliferation of areas of drug cultivation, and the dispersion and fragmentation of organized criminal networks within countries, like I mentioned before. I think the region's own institutional problems and socioeconomic instability, it has resulted in a deterioration of security by neglecting civil liberties and the impact that corruption has had on the defense sector. Now, we are talking about the involvement of military assets that are really part of the corrupt system and also are dealing drugs like we can see in places like Colombia or Mexico, like the Zetas cartel in Mexico. This is really the case of military assets getting corrupt.
My understanding of the war on drugs in Latin America as sponsored by and initiated by the United States of America, there's quite a few elements that have led to actually increased risks, both in Latin America and globally around the militarization of drug policy has led to actually higher levels of violence and a corresponding militarization of the criminal gangs, corruption, human rights violations. Militaries are sometimes less inclined to be compliant with human rights laws. And then, of course, the massive social disruption when you have a military response to a socioeconomic problem. Are they the same issues that you're dealing with and you're concerned when it comes to the risks associated with a military war on drugs?
Yeah, of course. For example, in a country like Argentina, we really have separated the external policy of defense and internal security matters. We really don't support the standard security model exported by the United States, involving the use of military personnel in counter-narcotic policies. That's why, in a way, Argentina is an example as why the war on drugs is not a good use for example, places like Colombia or Mexico. It's really just the opposite. We really support the independence in matters of not militarizing the drug trafficking problem.
Now, when you've written about this topic, I know that you've discussed the US financing Colombia's war on drugs, and you've discussed the process of fragmentization and micro-cartelization that you touched on before. Could you expand on what this actually means and what is the impact on businesses and civil society?
Yeah, the anti-narcotics financed by the US in Colombia favor a military-centric strategy. This tactic was known as a kingpin strategy in Colombia, in which security forces seek to take out the leader of an armed group. This strategy was used in the killing of Escobar in 93, or the Chapo Guzman in Mexico, the former leader of the Sinaloa cartel. This strategy in particular has generated more violence, creating struggle for territorial power within armed groups. As a result, the disappearance of the big drug cartels has led to the creation of smaller gangs with a horizontal structure. So the so-called process of fragmentation meant an end to the vertical command structures of the macro cartels. These organizations are less traditional and less dependent on territorial control, and they are capable of developing global networks of cocaine distribution. So, in a way, the big drug cartels used to control many aspects of the production, such as production, transportation, and sales as a part of the integration of the drug trade. Nowadays, we see a complete different thing. It's a network of different criminal organizations that are responsible for transportation, storage, and protection, and financing of the drug trafficking business. In contrast, the modern criminal groups tend to avoid excessive use of violence, maintaining a low profile through the bribery of public officials and provision of public services, instead of challenging the state authority like the Medellin cartel used to do during the 90s. Another factor to take into consideration when we talk about the microcartelization process is a phenomenon known as the democratization of cocaine. This process of fragmentation was supported by the exponential growth in coca leaf cultivation and the opening of new alternative and profitable markets in Europe, Asia, and Oceania, giving new smaller players access to the drug trade. These changes in the Colombian criminal structures in charge of the production and distribution of cocaine had a direct impact on the behavior and scope of the criminal organizations from neighboring countries. So the so-called democratization of cocaine process has encouraged the production and distribution by criminal groups that traditionally were focused on micro-trafficking. I think the most paradigmatic case seems to be Brazilian criminal organizations. They represent a new kind of criminal structure.
So, Damien, you've done a lot of research on this in your work with the University of Buenos Aires. What strategies have proven effective against organized crime, and what challenges do these strategies face today?
Well, I think in this context, we are talking about a transnational phenomenon. So it is important to stress the need of international cooperation to combat organized crime. So to tackle criminality, criminal organizations are capable of relocating their businesses. Pressure in one location simply leads to a geographical displacement of the criminal activities. So I think that's why cooperation initiatives are mandatory to corner and tackle criminal organizations. Neighboring countries must agree on active regional cooperation, so major criminal groups will not move to neighboring countries. Unfortunately, if we take a look historically what happened in Latin America, all the integration processes, they have always failed. There is a lack of long-term policies involving cooperation in the fights against organized crime. This is due to partisan ideologies, but fortunately, organizations like Interpol in this part of the world, they are doing a great job. Sometimes when cooperation fails, there is Interpol to enhance the exchange of information at an intelligence level and interaction between countries and key players like police departments.
And so I wonder, Damien, if we look to the future, if we consider the next decade, how do you envisage the evolution of organized crime in Latin America to evolve?
I'm not optimistic, to tell you the truth. If we don't take the necessary steps to tackle the problem on time, we will reach a final stage of organized crime known as a symbiotic stage. During this stage, organized crime manages to become part of the fabric of society, meaning that the lines between legal and illegal activities, they tend to blur, and the rule of law disappears. At this stage, takes place what we call a pax mafiosa. When country is not entirely captured by organized crime, this kind of symbiosis allows the consolidation of a social class capable of establishing a territorial order in the face of state weaknesses. At this point, it is difficult to turn back, because organized crime has consolidated as part of the political system and the legal economy. Therefore, it takes place a state of relative non-violence in the territories managed by organized crime groups, caused by agreements not to interfere in the criminal activities. In a way, I have to say that unfortunately, this scenario has already happened. Agreements like this have taken place in countries like Ecuador during the Correa's government, or in El Salvador and certain regions of Mexico.
And so when we do look at potential success stories for the future, when I look at different initiatives from around the world, we know that things like community policing, where local police forces engage with communities in crime prevention, that's been really beneficial. It fosters cooperation between citizens and the police. Judicial reforms is definitely needed in so many jurisdictions around the world. And where we see this is done successfully, where legal frameworks are strengthened and courts can reduce corruption and improve prosecution rates of organized crime, that's another big success factor. And when government agencies can bring business in, when the community and civil society can collectively address poverty and address inequality, this can reduce those socioeconomic factors that drive people towards organized crime. But of course, corruption, political will, and the adaptability of criminal networks always makes this hard in many jurisdictions around the world. What are your thoughts on that? I know you said that you're not particularly optimistic, but are there initiatives that you are seeing in some countries where you think this has been successful and should be replicated?
Yeah, I think in a way it's true. It's a bottom-up approach, what you're describing there. But we really need to renew the level of trust in politics and reduce incentives to join organized crime, no? By integrating marginalized groups. Of course, there are good examples, as I said before, in Argentina. But at the same time, I have to admit that corruption is endemic. So we really lack reliability in terms of cooperating with international agencies coming from Europe, for example, due to sudden changes of government in countries in Latin America. We can see this in Ecuador, we can see this in Argentina, and of course in Brazil with the change of government, for example, from Bolsonaro to Lula da Silva.
And so many of our listeners would have heard about the massive murder rates increasing over the years, especially, as you mentioned, in Ecuador, the invasion of universities, hospitals, the kidnapping and killing of police and prison guards, torching of cars in residential areas and looting of the capital. And then, of course, we had the live detention of people by criminal gangs on TV back on the 9th of January. So many people would have seen that, and much of that has been driven by the demand for drugs in Europe. But this explosion of violence that I think reached many European TVs and news outlets, is this replicated across Latin America, or is that just a small part of the problem?
Ecuador has a problem that, geopolitically speaking, is between two drug-producing countries like Colombia and Peru. So that determines the role that cities like Guayaquil is playing these days, no? The clash between our criminal organizations in Guayaquil taking over media channels and also universities. I think in a way it's part of the same problem. Different governments took different measures, not taking the necessary steps to keep going on improving and working with the communities. And that happened during the Correa's government really didn't want to keep dealing and negotiating with the criminal organizations. So one of the last mistakes that the last government made was really ceding the control of the penitentiary system to the criminal organizations. I would say that these days, the control over the penitentiary system is a key thing in order to tackle organized crime. We can see this in Brazil, for example, where the PCC is a phenomenon that is born in the penitentiary system in São Paulo and then spreads all over the neighboring countries and also at the national level. I would say that many of the wrong policies committed by previous governments, they were not following the same approach to drugs, which is working with the communities and trying to solve the problem as a socioeconomic problem and not as a militaristic problem.
And Damien, as we've discussed, you're a researcher at the University of Buenos Aires, where you're focusing on criminal structures in Latin America. Are you able to tell us a little bit about some of your current research?
Yeah, my current research involves the major interests that criminal organizations like the Comando Barbelo or the Primer Comando Capital in Brazil are taking in places like Argentina. They already control the logistical distribution of narcotics in places like Paraguay, and also all the logistical distribution of cocaine to Europe through the waterway called the Rio Paraná here, also involving the connections with criminal organizations coming from Europe, like the Balkan countries or the Ndrangheta. Now the Italian mafia has very strong ties in Latin America, and of course in Argentina, where we have Italian roots. So I think also this logic of fragmentation process, it has taken a step aside in the case of Brazil, where this huge organization called Primer Comando Capital is taking over neighboring countries as a transnational company with connections all over the world, also in Africa, in order to export the cocaine production.
And Damien, when you look around the world, what do you rank as the most pressing and most significant international risks today?
Well, I think these days the biggest threats to international security we face, of course, involves well-known threats like terrorism in all its forms, continues to be a serious threat, being the third most frequent crime. This is information provided by Interpol itself. The sophistication of the attacks tend to increase. On the one hand, jihadist terrorism is a threat in many places like Africa, North America, Asia, and the Pacific. On the other hand, we have the other kind of extremism, right and left extremism, which is increasingly and also using terrorist tactics in the regions of Europe, America, and Oceania. So I think that's the main concern these days involving the threats at the global scale.
There really is a big list, isn't it? Terrorism, both jihad terrorism, but also left and right extremism. And then, of course, the high levels of violence, including Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine, the unrest in Sudan and Yemen. And then, of course, the amazing amounts of violence going on in places like Haiti. There certainly is a significant amount of international risks today. So, yeah, thanks very much for highlighting those for us. And thank you very much for coming on the International Risk Podcast today, Damien.
Oh, thank you, Dominic. And of course, you are most welcome to visit this part of the world and coming to Argentina and Brazil.
I look forward to it. Coming to Argentina and Brazil sounds fantastic, especially in the middle of Europe's winter.
Definitely. That would be a great choice for you.
Well, that was a great conversation with Damien Gariglio. He's a political scientist and currently working as a researcher at the University of Buenos Aires, where he focuses on criminal structures in Latin America. Today's podcast was produced and coordinated by Ben Lawson. I'm Dominic Bowen, host of the International Risk Podcast. Thanks very much for listening. We'll speak again next week.
You've been listening to the International Risk Podcast, hosted by Dominic Bowen. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about this podcast. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week for your fix of risk-related stories.